Greetings. I'm your host, James Gillen, on As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got a great show. I've got Alfred Weber on the show today. And Alfred's always been a close friend of Isetti. He's come out here and spoken several times. And we've spent a lot of time together sitting out in the field watching UFOs and all kinds of other anomalies and taking paranormal photographs and you name it. I actually have a few of Alfred and his higher self standing right above him, which is a very big being, which is why the work he's doing. So rather than read a really long bio, we'll just bring Alfred on the air, and he's actually began the exopolitic movement, and he's got the books on exopolitics, and I can go on and on and on. You can just go to exopolitics.com if you want to check out Alfred's work, but there's so many areas we want to cover that I'm just going to bring Alfred on the show. Alfred, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, James.
Hey, great to hear your voice again.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we were just talking before the show. I actually heard you via Skype in South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I just got back from a 2-week trip. First, we were as a judge at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, and then in South Africa at the UFO Science and Consciousness Conference. But then we went with Michael Tellinger down to Adam's Calendar, which Laura Eisenhower said, quote, "Oh, we're back at the scene of the crime." Because that's where supposedly 280,000 years ago or so, the Anunnaki leader, Enki, landed. And we saw these enormous stone circle, which go for hundreds of miles, and which Michael Tellinger has now written a book and theorized was actually a free energy machine for teleporting the gold that they were mining up into their spaceship. So we can talk about that later, but the Anunnaki essentially came here and downgraded our DNA and stole our gold. So, and they left us a Anunnaki Illuminati hierarchical bloodlines. So, I was saying nothing has changed in 280,000 years.
it seems I've really looked deeply into this, and I've looked at a lot of different equations out there, and it seems like the Anunnaki were kind of split in consciousness, and some were benevolent and they did definitely tinker with our DNA and took the knuckle dragger here and jumped him up genetically, for their own purposes. But, it was a kind of a joint, they worked together, one got the up jump in the DNA and the other one helped, them fulfill their needs. And then there's another group of Anunnaki, which were just really went off the deep end and went into this tyrant program and wanted to just subdue everything and even wanted to kill everybody on the way out.
Wow.
So there seems to be a kind of a split situation there. I just know from doing a lot of research into it that some were I don't want to say benevolent, but they did understand karma and they did understand the repercussions they were having,
right?
But they had to help their own race as well at the same time, so put them in a weird position. And then there was one of the Anunnaki which actually ended up being called Jehovah, which was the Jehovah the Terrible, the wrathful god, the warring wrathful god that just wreaked havoc on the planet.
Right.
And I don't know, that's where my research took me so far, but I'm really open to any other, research.
Oh, yeah.
Other ideas.
Yeah. And then kind of as a third topic, right before I left, we published an article in which we have two whistleblowers, both Andy Bishago, who's actually a Mars visitor, and a colleague of his is Brett Stillings, William Brett Stillings, who both of whom participated in the CIA's Mars visitation program. And they were part of a special seminar in 1980. This was from 80 to 83. Mm-hmm. And in 1980, held at the College of the Siskiyous in California near Mount Shasta. And two of their classmates, one was Barry Satoru, who later became Barack Obama, who now occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And the other was Regina Dugan, who's the current director of DARPA, the Department of Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. And both Dugan and Obama and Bishago and Stillings went through this class together and then became part of the CIA's Mars visitation program from 1980 to 1983. And both of them, of the witnesses, Bishago and Stillings, were with Obama on Mars. And mm-hmm. they can reproduce his dialogue on Mars, you know, what he was doing, to, you know, a very intimate fashion. And later, in fact, it turns out that Bishago, Obama, and Dugan were chosen to go into a three-month seminar in which they were tasked to learn the Martian language, the language of the Martian humans. And then they were given some intercepted Martian communications, and they each had to write a threat assessment of whether the Martians were a threat to the U.S. or to the planet Earth. And Andy apparently wrote, you know, a very reasonable paper that said, no, these people aren't a threat. What it is the U.S. is now attempting to occupy and colonize their planet, because by that time, the U.S. had sent, several hundred thousand people there. They had sent 97,000 people there by 1980, of whom only 7,000 had survived. And and so Andy said, well, you know, if the Martians were sending people here, you might expect some resistance. Mm-hmm. So, but apparently Dugan wrote a paper that towed the military line, you know, which backed up the occupation. And Barack Obama played his cards close to his chest as usual, and you know, so he's ended up president of the United States, yeah. And Dugan has ended up director of DARPA. And at the same time, we published that, and just the week before, Barack Obama issued a response to the White House petition for extraterrestrial disclosure. And in that response, he said, well, there's no evidence that there are any extraterrestrials in the whole universe, whereas he himself has been on Mars and was tasked to learn the Martian language. So we have this liar, you know, it's just total liar in the White House, not very much different from Richard Nixon, from George W. Yeah. Bush, from, you know, basically he's a career CIA operative. His grandparents were in CIA. Mm-hmm. His mother was a career CIA operative, not sure who his father was. There's a fellow who's written a book says that his father is Malcolm X.
Yeah. So yeah, I've even heard he could even be cloned from Ramses. So
yeah, right. I mean, there are all these versions, and he's really not a political leader. He is an operative in a CIA apparatus that has taken occupation and control of the presidency.
Yeah. Have you seen the huge scar on the side of his head where he had a major, obviously he had some kind of major brain surgery?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, what's up? I always go, what's up with that? I mean, there's no record of that or anything. And what was either taken out or put in? You know, it's quite interesting when you look at that.
Yeah, and on this past May 24th, I can remember that date because it's also my birthday. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama, was invited to speak at Westminster Hall in London, and he was one of only three people who have spoken there in current history, one of whom is the Queen, the other is the Pope. So they asked the Obama to come and speak, and there's videos on YouTube where you see Obama coming in and the kind of archbishops who were there to greet him do the MK Ultra hand signals on him and completely displace him and so disoriented him that he put down the wrong date in the book where he had to sign, and his wife was really upset, you know, because she said. So this lends more and more credence that he is really a Manchurian candidate, i.e., he is under active mind control. He's under active MK Ultra mind control, and is a Manchurian candidate because we've actually seen it in operation at Westminster Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's.
I mean, what's he doing now? 17 days in Hawaii on vacation, and the U.S. is burning down.
Yeah.
No, really.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. It's just, you know, it's getting crazier and crazier. I know that you know what the polls were saying, 93%, 94%, some saying 97% of the people are saying no bailouts, and he bailed everybody out and then gave them bonuses. You know, you look at, you know, all the polls and the people are saying are strictly against all the actions that are being taken. It's just unbelievable. And then you look at it, and there's an old time CNN poll that said 86% of the people believe that there is a cover up and UFOs exist. So now you've got what, 6% and 14% that he seems to serve. I'm wondering who these people are. You know, who is this 4% and this 6% and whatever happened to the people?
Yeah. So it seems that he is a lifelong CIA operative, and B, he may be under MK Ultra mind control. Yeah. i.e. some kind of Manchurian candidate, or just utterly brazen, where, you know, he knows his task is to carry out a certain role in the apparatus. He has a large part of the American population under hypnosis. And you know, where they still think he's a legitimate democratic leader, where it's this apparatus that is kind of, you know, functioning. And it's going to be very interesting to see how he navigates further.
What I find it interesting is basically his campaign promises was to get rid of the Patriot Act. He was going to shut down Guantanamo Bay, and he was going to end the war.
Right.
And And he did exactly the opposite of everything he said he was going to do. And I don't know why people can't use base common sense and go, what's wrong with this picture? It's like Bush on steroids.
Right, right. And so now what he's doing in the campaign is that he has become a populist. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, well, I'm going to look out for your interests economically. So, you know, after 2013 is when the crackdown is going to come.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Judging by, the pattern that he has followed to date.
Yeah. Now you just got back from the war crimes tribunal, the Bush-Blair war crimes tribunal. And I'd love to hear more about that and what are the implications of that.
Yeah. Actually, they can be relatively far-reaching. What happened at the tribunal is that George W. Bush and Tony Blair, the former UK Prime Minister, were found guilty for crimes against peace. That's the most serious of war crimes. That's the Nuremberg-level war crime that were leveled at Hitler and the Nazis for starting an unjustified war of aggression in World War II that ended up with the deaths of 25 million plus people. And the same applied here, where the court found that Bush and Blair, using deceit and deception, started an unjustified war in Iraq, in which 1.4 million Iraqis died. And along with the judgment, the court mandated that that judgment and the record be sent to the International Criminal Court, but also be sent to the 117 nations who have signed the Rome Statute, which is the treaty that established the International Criminal Court. And what that means is that when the International Criminal Court, which authorizes the trying of war criminals, was established, they established a worldwide network of courts. And it was envisioned that every nation that signed on to the International Criminal Court, their national courts, their courts would acquire what's called universal jurisdiction, where they can arrest and prosecute war criminals. And so, and it's envisioned that the national courts of the signing nations would actually be the sort of the line courts that would go out and catch all of the war criminals. So what we have is 117 nations, their courts that are now empowered to catch and try war criminals. Well, up until now, with the exception of Pinochet, who was actually extradited from the UK back to Chile under these provisions, most of the war criminals that have been caught have been people, you know, kind of these token guys in Africa or in certain situations that, in a sense, have been set up by the Anunnaki Illuminati hierarchical power structure. And it's all tokenism, i.e., war crimes can be carried out en masse by the West, but they will go out and they'll find, you know, these kind of guys to go up and prosecute. That's not to denigrate their war crimes. But, for example, in 2007 alone, and we heard testimony about this at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal at one of our hearings in 2007, there were over 140 complaints for war crimes by the U.S. and the U.K. brought before the International Criminal Court, and these were just ignored because that court is controlled by the Illuminati powers.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't control all of the 117 nations. These are some nations that are quite independent. So the court now ordered the commission, which is like the prosecutors, to send to contact all 117 nations with the verdict and ask them to arrest and prosecute Bush and Blair. And what was really interesting was this, and it's quite a coincidence. Right after the Malaysia trial, which ended on November 22nd, we gave our verdict on November 22nd, 2011. And I want to get back to that date in just a moment. Right after that, I went to South Africa. And while I was in South Africa, George W. Bush all of a sudden shows up on kind of this charm offensive, you know, this kind of thing, goodwill visits to three neighboring African countries to South Africa. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, why is George W. Bush being deployed here where we just found him guilty of crimes against peace and I'm down in South Africa? It was just too coincidental. It was like while we were sitting in judgment of George W. Bush, Barack Obama, during the trial, met with the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And the day that I landed in Kuala Lumpur, it was filled with Canadian flags, and I found out why. And they said, oh, the Governor General of Canada is here visiting on a state visit. Well, the Governor General of Canada doesn't represent the people here in Canada. It represents the Queen uh-huh. of England. So it's like the Queen of England was visiting Malaysia. Then Obama meets the Prime Minister of Malaysia while we're sitting in Kuala Lumpur as a court. And then mm-hmm. immediately thereafter, the week after, while I'm in South Africa, Bush is in three neighboring African countries. Well, what happened is it backfired because then the War Crimes Commission, there was a tremendous public outcry to have Bush arrested uh-huh. in the three countries. And they went to the governments and asked to have him arrested. Now, they ran into red tape and the people saying no, but we're just getting started. So mm-hmm. the point being is that Bush is kind of a major chess piece or, you know, public puppet of what I call the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, is now on the run because they have been found guilty of war crimes, and we have the apparatus. We can now go through, and we are going through, the Rome Statute to the 117 nations. And Canada mm-hmm. is one of the nations, and during the week before I left Vancouver to go to the Malaysia trial, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton each come up on the same day to collect $150,000 each to give a luncheon speech in Vancouver. And we're down there, you know, there's a whole group of citizens attempting to do a citizen's arrest. Mm-hmm. And there was such opposition within Canada to Bush being here that we got the leader of the opposition party, the New Democrats, to say that Bush was a war criminal and he shouldn't be here in Canada. And Canada is a signatory to the International Criminal Court. So we have these guys surrounded now. So they are on the run. And what was really interesting is that when we were in Johannesburg there at Wit University in the conference, and it was right after you were speaking, I think, via Skype, we were back in the green room where all the speakers gathered, and this woman, Sandra May, she's the national president of the American Society of Dowsers, was back there also. And she brought out her dowsing rods, and this South African woman took out the dowsing rods and asked, is George W. Bush going to be arrested? And she asked it twice, and the dowsing rods just went crazy and swung, and the answer was yes. So there is going to be accountability here. Now, what was really interesting was that through complete coincidence, we arrived at our verdict of guilty of crimes against peace for George W. Bush on November 22nd, 2011. Now, that's the 48th anniversary, as you know, James, of the Kennedy assassination, of the assassination of John F. Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963. And there are photographs of his father, George H.W. Bush, in Dealey Plaza, where he was a covert CIA agent in charge of coordinating the assassination in Dealey Plaza on that day. And so, although George H.W. Bush has not stand trial for that regicide and assassination, 48 years later, we're able to find his son guilty of crimes against peace. So at least there's some kind of cyclical karma on that major crime, war crimes family known as the Bush family.
Yeah, it's all tying together. I've always felt that the Kennedy spirit is alive and well and, you know, having its day and working in unseen ways, you know, to bring all this out.
Yeah, it was very, very dramatic, and we were able to get a tremendous amount of press. I mean, the announcement of the court was carried in the Washington Post. It was carried in the UK Telegraph. It was carried in 100 newspapers in the U.S. It was carried by, you know, over 100 television stations in the U.S., but many of them did a kind of sleight of hand, and they called it a mock trial. It's not a mock trial. We actually had jurisdiction through natural law as a duly constituted international tribunal, and our verdict can be taken through the Rome Statute to these one or more of the 117 signatory nations courts, and they can enforce it and arrest and prosecute and jail, imprison George W. Bush and Tony Blair. So kind of as a, you know, as a symbol of these guys always thought that they were scot-free. This is like, well, not so fast.
Yeah.
You're not scot-free anymore.
Well, you know, to me, when you look at the real numbers, I know there's probably, what, 1.2 million minimum people killed over there in Iraq. And the whole thing began on a deception and lies. And you know, they never found any weapons of mass destruction or anything else there. And they tried to tie it into the 911 thing, which had no ties whatsoever, and then even admitted that it had nothing to do with 911 later. So, I mean, they got caught lying, you know, to I don't know how many million people watching, you know, the news over and over again. People grabbed those clips and replayed them And they said, I never said that. I never said that. But the clip was right there.
Right.
I mean, they even played it for him and said, look, here's where you said it. And they go, "That I never said that. That was misconstrued." I just go, oh, my God. You know, what's wrong with these people? I mean, they will just bold-faced lie, even though they're flat busted, you know, and the evidence is just overwhelming. They will continue to just bold-faced lie with no shame, no, not even batting an eye. You know, what kind of people are these? I always ask myself, you know, what, do they have a soul? Are they human? You know, who are these guys?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny that there's some of the there's one school of the raw material, channelings kind of, that say that what they are is upper dimensional negative souls, i.e. they come in to be as negative as they can, and that's how they're achieving their kind of identity. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that very much anywhere else. Usually one sees that, you know, you're a human soul, and if you go out and perform evil acts, you're going to get karmic consequences. Mm-hmm. But this version of it, the raw version of it, is that people like Hitler and, you know, all the Cheneys and Bushes and Rothschild and all these kind of people who knowingly come in and engage in these satanic acts you know, create wars knowingly where there are millions of deaths in order to, quote, sacrifice that many people to higher evil powers, that those are evil souls, and they're kind of getting they're meeting their potential as negative souls. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, I've heard different stories. I've heard people saying, well, Hitler was necessary to, you know, you need the dark forces there to, or you wouldn't be able to recognize the light forces, and they're there to test the spirit, you know, and make sure you don't make the wrong choices and go down that road. You know, I've heard a million stories about that, but, you know, I'm pretty basic in this. You know, basically what I say is have fun in your light review, you know, because there are universal, you know, there is universal law. There are universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment. And if, you know, and we all know them, you know, it's basically, you know, universal peace, brother, sisterly love, individual prosperity and freedom for everyone, and really operating under unity consciousness where all creation is sacred. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a human or a rock or, you know, you have to be very respectful, you know, when you're here on the planet. And to me, you know, I know people have their karma and they have their things to work out down here, but it still just doesn't make it right. And I know people are going to go, well, there is no right or there's no wrong in spirit. But, you know, if you're in a loop where one person murders another and he comes back and murders him, and then they come back again and murder each other again, and they keep on this loop, does that make murder okay? You know, no, it doesn't. They're stuck in a loop. And because one murdered the other still doesn't make it okay. It's still an act, you know, it's a very aggressive, negative act and needs to be dealt with accordingly. And hopefully to heal that situation, you know, release the past and move forward and live according to the universal principles.
Right.
You know, so I don't. My own self, I mean, I don't want to be heavy and be a judger of this situation because, I'm aware of my past lives, and you know, one of them, I had a big broad axe. I was a Viking. I hacked heads off. I was a merciless warrior, but my whole family was killed by this other tribe, and I was just so hurt and distraught and angry. You know, that's what it made me, and I had to heal that. I had to clear that up. So I understand what would drive somebody to that, and I understand, but it still isn't right action. You know, it still right. needs to be healed and addressed. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this is it's very difficult to understand what the percentage is to be a dark actor like a Cheney or a Rumsfeld or a Bush or an Obama, even, who knows exactly what he's doing and who's being extremely deceitful.
Yeah.
It's just very, very hard to know that.
Well, that's what I do have a problem with lying, you know, and when those lies have disastrous effects and affect a whole lot of people, and when they won't even admit, you know, to a mistake. You know, we all make mistakes, but when you just keep lying and doing the same thing, and you have a track record of creating some extreme, you know, pain and suffering and death to innocent families and destroy the environment. And, you know, you look at all the Gulf oil mess and all the other things going on, and these guys just keep going forward without blinking an eye. To me, that's one thing I do have a problem with. You know, I just said, you know, and it's not that I hate them. It's, I love the earth and I love the people on the earth. And it's out of love that I get, you know, that I put a very dim view on that, because, you know, I would like to see everybody living in harmony with each other and nature on the planet. And that's the original intent of the earth. And it got hijacked. And these are the hijackers, you know.
Right. Exactly. Well, You had also wanted to talk about the S-1867,
yes,
which allows the military to intern Americans without charges.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the various versions of the bill here, you know, some of the headlines are the entire U.S. is now a war zone.
Yeah.
There's some other versions which state. Let's say, I'm looking at some of the there's some interpretations,
mm-hmm,
that say that the version which passed the Senate does not authorize the military to intern Americans on American soil.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a lot of confusion
about
that issue.
Yeah, I've gotten three different stories, and
yeah,
I get emails from people, and they quote people's websites and everything and saying that was stopped and that was halted, and other people said, or no, and, you know, and they're saying, no, it's on the books, it's been accepted, you know. And so, I mean, I've gotten so many conflicting emails on that and so-called evidence that I guess we just have to go back to the what was passed and read it very carefully and read between the lines and make sure they didn't sneak something in there.
Yeah, yeah. it says it's well here I'm kind of reading here is analysis that says, according to Section 1032 on the requirement for military custody, the requirement to detain a person in military custody under this section does not apply to citizens of the United States. And then there's a second section which says, and under Section 1031, which relates to the use of the armed forces to detain covered persons, quote, pursuant to the authorization for use of military force, has a very narrow purpose of describing detention, quote, under the law of war, of people who either participated in the terrorist attacks of September 11th, or is a member or substantial supporter of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners. Now, the problem with that is that depending on how fascistic the U.S. government goes, they can define anybody who wears a T-shirt saying, you know, get out of Afghanistan, as, quote, a substantial supporter of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners. Because ever since the inception of the Patriot Act, the entire direction of the government in the U.S. has been to criminalize dissent and to make lawful dissent under the First Amendment equivalent to being at war with the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so while there's articles there's a legitimate issue of interpretation of Section 1031 of Senate Bill of the Senate bill, and I've got the full text of the bill here, mm-hmm. and I can just scroll down to Section 1031. But part of the danger is that law and order are collapsing in the U.S. because the integrity of the law enforcement is collapsing. Mm-hmm. And so you have the utter collapse of courts and the judicial system. And I have colleagues of mine who have gone into court, and this happened just over the last couple of weeks, where their entire pleadings were just not even read, and the judge had written their opinion before they even went into court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that we're dealing with a situation in the U.S. where the courts are starting to collapse, and the law enforcement proceedings, you know, the law enforcement process is collapsing. You know, just take a look at what the Oakland Police Department has done against the Occupy Oakland people. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the fact at the coordinated efforts of the Department of Homeland Security on a coordinated conspiracy basis to shut down that legitimate protest movement. I mean, they, you know, you have the combined power of the federal government in terms of the Homeland Security, who behind the scenes coordinated the shutdown of that movement. So you could very easily have a Homeland Security in cooperation with the military interpret this act in a certain way so as to, you know, take Section 10, 1031, and I'm kind of scrolling at Section 1034 now, kind of scrolling there, and then in a situation like that, you know, I mean, they would, you know, say you take some kind of a false flag, and they would use 1031 combined with coordination by Homeland Security and the Department of Defense behind the scenes and say, under the authority of 1031, we are rounding up all of these people, you know, and just the act of wearing a T-shirt that is, you know, in favor of, you know, withdrawal from Afghanistan or some other pretext, you know, or that if you were in favor of Occupy Washington or Occupy Wall Street, well, now you're an enemy of the state because the courts have essentially broken down because the courts are infiltrated by the intelligence agencies. Anyway, you know, I can see how, even though some people are trying to say that this act is not a problem, I can see how the act is a problem. Oh, good. Here we go. Detainee matters, Section 1031. Affirmation of the authority of the armed forces to detain covered persons for the use of military force. In general, Congress affirms the authority of the president to use all necessary and appropriate force pursuant to author includes the authority to detain covered persons pending disposition under the laws of war. A covered person is a person who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist acts that occurred on September 11 or harbored those responsible for the attacks. Hey, under that section, Richard Cheney, George W. Bush, and Donald Rumsfeld should be arrested immediately, along with probably 20,000 Jane and John Does who coordinated the false flag operation of 9/11.
Exactly. I was going to get at that, but you already caught it ahead of me.
Yeah. I mean, this is how utterly Orwellian this law is. Because, you know,
pass the law against themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the terrorist attacks that occur, you know, persons who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks of September 11th, that's the inside of the CIA, the NSA, the DEA, the FBI, you know, all those characters should be thrown in jail on the basis of Section 1031B1 of, you know, Senate Bill 1867. I mean, you know.
Don't like 65%? I saw something where 65% of the people do not believe the official story, or probably more, I wouldn't be surprised, and do believe there was inside shenanigans going on.
Yeah, and then B, a person who was a part or substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces that are engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners, including any person who has committed a belligerent act or who has directly supported such hostilities in the aid of enemy forces. Okay, first of all, Al-Qaeda was set up by the CIA. Al-Qaeda is a CIA database. Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda is the controlled opposition run by the CIA because they control both sides of the war. That's how the war game is played. And yeah. And so once again, the person who was the entire CIA and all the alphabet agencies, the White House on down, the Department of Defense, should be in jail because of this section.
I know.
Looking at
it's so funny because I was looking at that same thing. What is whose flag are these rebels flying? You know, yeah. Now they've taken over Libya and all these other places.
Yeah,
it's Al Qaeda.
Yeah,
because that's the flag. Yeah, so we're supporting Al Qaeda.
Yeah, Al Qaeda are CIA fighters. So when they went in to do their destabilization in Libya, they just called on their CIA fighters and brought them in.
Yeah,
that was it.
Exactly. You know? And then they
say
all of his gold and all of his oil.
Yeah, and then they say, or has directly supported such hostilities. So anybody who has worn a T-shirt that says "Out of Afghanistan" or something like that, you know, then it'll be part of the dragnet. So these are what they call Orwellian acts. This is true Brave New World, George Orwell. This is absolutely George Orwell. You know, this is like double speak.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And this is where that side believes that they have so totally shut down dissent that the entire population will just swallow it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I have, you know, it's like in the same way that the light is increasing, the dark is getting much darker.
Yeah. And it's, you know, to me, I love that the one thing that one promise, you know, our pres did keep is he said that he was going to bring forward a transparent government. And it's so transparent now as to how despicable it is. You can't miss it.
Yeah. So, you know, and things, there's a lot of unexpected things which could happen in 2012. You know, it's true that politics make strange bedfellows. And there's a guy named Sheriff Arpaio down in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
And my radio program, Exopolitics Radio, was produced out of Phoenix, Arizona by a company in the Hispanic world.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot that in the Hispanic world, Sheriff Arpaio was anathema. I mean, that person, you know, the Hispanic community feels totally oppressed there. And we're not talking about illegal aliens. We're talking about Hispanics that have been here for generations, even before the white people arrived. That's their land, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, to me, I have always seen the dark side of Sheriff Arpaio. Well, so yesterday, today, it was reported that Sheriff Arpaio has now started an investigation of Barack Obama's eligibility for the presidency, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And which he may be eligible for if his, you know, if his mother's if his mother is a U.S. citizen, and if his father was Malcolm X, hey, you know, who's to argue? But the problem is that the president has put forth a visibly fraudulent birth certificate at a press conference. And you know, that is a total fraud.
Yeah.
In which he's born at a Hawaii hospital with an African father named Barack Obama, which is entirely dubious because he's not genetically related to Barack Obama Sr. So Sheriff Arpaio is starting under the laws of Arizona an investigation into whether Barack Obama is eligible for the presidency for the purposes of the Arizona primary and the Arizona election laws. And his report's going to come out in February of 2012. Mm-hmm. And apparently Arpaio's been getting death threats on this. Mm-hmm. So you say that politics made strange bedfellows.
Yeah, it's interesting. You don't know where this is going to go. There's so many wild cards here right now. I'm really preying on the mass awakening, of humanity, and where they just finally say enough. I'm not going to participate in this program anymore.
Right.
And that there's some major, peaceful noncompliance, and. I always say, the old saying, if they gave a war and nobody showed up, would they have one? And if everybody stopped building their weapons, what would they do? So it's just a matter of stopping the willing participation in building the war weapons, being involved in that industry, and being involved as being the corporate brute squad, around the world to steal other countries' resources.
Right.
Because that's basically what it all boils down to.
Exactly.
Yeah, all the other reasons for going to war have nothing to do with what's really going on. And if you look at history, there's never been a holy war. It's always been because one king or one leader wanted what the other leader had. And sometimes it was resources, sometimes it was a woman, And that's always been the act. And then they get the religions and everybody else to back them and demonize the other group. And next thing the whatever press they have or whatever does a really good job of demonizing, creating terror and fear. And then they have their war, and then they get their resources.
Right.
It's an old program. I'm just wondering how long people are going to fall for it.
Yeah. Well, this kind of gets to the discoveries that we made after the UFO Science and Consciousness Conference in South Africa, where the week after that, Michael Tellinger took us out to Adam's Calendar and to the stone circles there, we've actually produced a trailer to a film called Awakening Adam's Calendar. I'm not sure whether you've had a chance to see that. Have you, James, at all?
I saw part of it, I believe. I don't.
Okay, good. Yeah. Basically, on 11/11/11, the South African government shut down access to Adam's Calendar. Uh-huh. And the week before the conference, they posted a military guard there so as not to allow public access. Uh-huh. And this is an historical site. So we decided and the armed guard would go on duty at 8 a.m., so we decided to meet at about 5:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. and to go in the early hours and to, quote, occupy Adam's Calendar. Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's a good one. Did they ever come down? Did they come down until you leave? Or?
We got there, and all of a sudden, just as soon as we got there, this mist came over the entire site, so you couldn't see anything. It was a pea soup fog, so we couldn't be seen from the guard post. And so we were there until 7:45, and we left at 7:45, and the exact instant that we left, the fog lifted.
That's funny.
So I think that there were other forces that enveloped us with this fog.
Yeah, but they've been known to do that. We have that happen here a lot, especially, you know, we'll have people drive up here and it's just socked in, you know, thick clouds everywhere. And I always tell people, well, if you just gather together and put your antenna out there, you can open up the vortex and the clouds will just separate. And they do, and it happens almost every time. It's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. This is probably one of the oldest known structures on Earth, and mm-hmm. it's on the side of a cliff, and it's been, you know, dated at about 280,000 years.
Wow.
And it's so supposedly the place. It's kind of this you know, with the sacred geometry, mm-hmm. Where the Anunnaki leader Enki came down. And then created this site with multiple purposes, one mm-hmm. of which is as the central energy gathering of a complex of stone circles that were like free energy machines that stretched all the way north up to Zimbabwe. And they are really archaeological wonders. I've got this kind of coffee table book on my desk here called Temples of the African Gods mm-hmm. By Michael Tellinger and John Heine, with a picture of one of the stone circles. And they're all part of this complex, and that's how they would mine the gold 280,000 years ago and mm-hmm. teleport it to Adam's calendar, where they had a central teleporter that would teleport it up dimensionally to their waiting space vehicles or even to their planet. But mm-hmm. It just was like, you know, going down and seeing visibly where the Anunnaki intervention happened, that because Homo sapiens was created by one version, by a consortium of the upper dimensional humans, the Pleiadians, the Alpha Centaurians, and others, as a 12-strand DNA light being in the third dimension. And the Anunnaki came, and they violated the law of non-intervention, and using advanced sound technologies, devolved our DNA back down to 2. Mm-hmm. strand. So we devolved into consciousness wage slaves, as mm-hmm. it were. And that situation, I mean, the exact situation has lasted for 280,000 years. I realized that the current Anunnaki planetary leader is the queen, the British crown, and the queen. She's mm-hmm. the Anunnaki leader, and she's grooming her grandson, Prince William, to be the succeeding Anunnaki leader, because they're like a criminal gang, and they control God, gold, oil, and drugs,
mm-hmm.
planet-wide.
Yeah.
And that's their franchise, and they are involved in all these things that are designed to keep our DNA from evolving. Everything from HARP, which is basically attack on the DNA, to Fukushima and depleted uranium, mm-hmm. and all the ionizing radiation, which is an attack on the DNA, to GMO crops, which are an attack on the DNA. So mm-hmm. the basic pattern that the Anunnaki interveners laid down with their hierarchical structure and their exploitation with gold and their DNA devolvement actually is living itself out in vivid pattern now through the Anunnaki planetary leader, the British crown, And their machine, which is God, gold, oil, and drugs, and the financial system. So we have to figure out a way to, like, intervene in this cycle, you know, like a bully. Like, how do you stop a bully? You know, you have to intervene and stop that cycle of bullying, and and that's our task now. So that is going to be, you know, that's our major task, because the Anunnaki planetary rulers, the Queen and their apparatus, they're continuing to do what they're doing, and they're already grooming the next heir, which is Prince William.
Yeah.
So, well, you know.
Luck with that one.
Yeah, so it was like a real kind of grokking moment that just to really see the 280,000 years kind of go by right before your eyes and see, my God, this is the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
This is what's been going down.
Yeah. Yeah, it is quite interesting how, you know, definitely there was a golden age and then everything fell. You know, you read the Emerald Tablets and they talk about that a lot of the higher beings just left. They go, boy, it's just these negative souls are coming in and it's getting so crazy here. They just said, we're out of here, and they just left. And so a lot of the benevolent ones split. But my feeling is right now is that this chapter is on its way out. It's coming to a close, and you know, they can plan all they want, but the original geneticists, you know, the original beings, the Pleiadians, and you know, there's an Orion Council of Light and the Andromedans and Syrians and all these other beings, that the benevolent side is stepping in now, and they're saying enough's enough. And before, they used to just be observers, you know, and honor the prime directive. But now it looks like they are stepping in and just saying, okay, you know, you've already been extremely trespassed upon, and so now we're going to reset the earth and put it back on its original course to be in Eden, you know, where everybody can evolve to their highest potential. And I think they're fully operational in downloads and DNA upgrades and reactivating people's, you know, dormant DNA and just doing all kinds of things to turn the planet around, both spiritually, energetically, with the grids, and with the physical planet itself.
Right. And that should be accelerating greatly over the next few years. And as this false matrix begins to collapse, then they will be falling out into some other space that we won't even see them.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Too, their shields are going to go down. Their, you know, their false face and their whatever they're doing is. You know, like what Jesus said, you know, he said, no rock shall be left unturned and all the iniquities will be shouted from the rooftops. Not to be a Bible thumper, but I mean, it pretty much sums up what's happening right now is that Armageddon, you know, the great uncovering of everything and everything coming up to the surface is happening right now. Yeah. And I think the wake up, the energy behind the wake up, or the mass awakening and healing of humanity, the earth is so massive right now that their time is short, very short.
Right. Yeah. They really are on the run, and all of their structures are just teetering.
Yeah.
What is amazing is that it's in North America where, in a way, they're almost making their last stand.
That's what it looks like. You know, speaking of The Last Stand, there's several things that we already covered basically about the DNA and shutting down consciousness. And, you know, as a, you know, a while back I was looking at it and I go, God, they've got aspartame, they've got fluoride in the water, they're shutting down people's pineal glands, everything, they're doing everything possible now with all the GMOs and the chemicals, you know, that are in the water, in the food and everything else. They're doing everything possible to shut us down and make us sick and dysfunctional. And then you add that, the chemtrails on top of that and the new sprays they're coming out with. It's just like unbelievable, the wholesale aggression they've done against humanity. And what's even, to me, is even more unbelievable is that the downright refusal of most of humanity to even acknowledge what is being done to them.
Right. Well, that's partially a function of the mind control and the brainwashing.
Yeah.
Because they have HARP, the chemtrails appears to be an integral part of the HARP weapon system, i.e. it's the atmosphere-based component, and mm-hmm. they're spreading out all of these nanoparticles to magnify the directed energy beams that are coming down as carriers from the electrified, activated ionosphere. And on those carrier waves, I've actually heard former Defense Department technicians who developed the software that is used that is broadcast by HARP directly into the limbic system of the brain, which mm-hmm. controls people's emotions, whereby people are made, you know, they're either dazed out, or they go into road rage, or they're going to fear, so that you have the great masses of people who are still enmeshed in the matrix. You know, they just think that all of this is real, and all these are real people, and they're giants, and they have the HARP brainwashing going into them 24/7. So
yeah.
It's like, you know, that's why they're out of body and they're just robots. And that's why it's so important to bring awareness of HARP to the public. We're thinking about developing a treaty, you know, an anti-HARP treaty that mm-hmm. we could start to bring to the nations, because not every nation is going to be willing to go along with HARP, because, you know, just it's really a criminal gang that controls HARP. There are 17 HARP facilities around the world, and now they have some mobile seaborne HARP mm-hmm. Units. But, you know, so that we can begin to take proactive steps and start building a positive future at the same time that these people are trying to build their negative timeline.
Yeah. And, you know, for most people that don't understand, a lot of people think this is crazy talk, you know, or whatever. But, you know, basically, you know, to put it in a very simple term, everything has a frequency to it. Love and joy and bliss have a frequency, and you can actually measure it.
Right.
They have measured it. The same thing goes with fear and agitation and, you know, to daze, put people in confusion, and all of those things have a frequency as well. They can even sedate you with just frequencies. And this is a well-known science, and it, you know, it goes under psychotronics, that you know, they can turn a microwave beam or use, you know, another apparatus on you and actually drive you mad.
Sure.
And there is a lot of Well, a lot of testimony around this, a lot of evidence that, you know, they do have it through HARP and satellite technology, and they can zone in on anybody's house and either just basically put you out or sedate you or drive you or agitate the hell out of you or drive you mad, basically. They have that technology.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And also, frequency weapons can induce any medical pathology in the body, you know, cancers,
exactly,
other sort of things. And a former colleague of ours, you may have known him, author Jerry Smith, who wrote the book HARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
He died of abdominal cancer that suddenly flared up after he appeared on the Governor Jesse Ventura show to talk about HARP.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he went on that show, and a few months later, he was dead of that cancer. So that's how they get rid of people who can really bring that type of information to the public awareness. And that's why it's so important to keep one's inner center connected to the higher vibrational sources so that those frequency weapons, you know, they can't get to you because you're vibrating at a realm that's beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I think. And anyway,
I agree. I think I've been hit by everything, you know, here.
Yeah, yeah.
Including physical, I've had bullets whiz by my head. I've had my lug nuts taken off the truck, you know, the front tire. They always take the left front tire lug nuts off. So when your tire goes, you're janked into the oncoming traffic, you know.
Oh, my God.
That's one of their favorite tricks, you know, and the brake lines being cut and everything else. But, you know, I knew when I got into this that it comes with the territory.
Right.
I knew, you know, I don't see myself as a victim or anything else. And I wouldn't be here right now if it weren't for those higher forces constantly repairing me and putting me back together.
Yes. Well, what do you see for the upcoming year to 2012 as we transit through the galactic plane?
You know, I tell you what, the information I'm getting, and I'm... you know, I have many hats here. I have like a scientific hat. I have the UFO hat. I have the spiritual hat. But all these different hats. And it's quite interesting. And what I get from the main contacts here are the Pleiadians. And, you know, some of them are like a couple million years ahead of us in time as we know it. And, you know, they're fifth and sixth and seventh dimensional beings. And, you know, they almost sound biblical when you talk to them. You know, they talk about God as being a frequency and a force, and that the Earth is going to be reset. You know, they're cleaning up the psychometrized energy into the planet, like the Dome of the Rock and areas where the ships have been flying over there, and putting a tremendous burst of energy out. They're cleaning up that old program. Those old mindsets that are stuck in the earth. They're doing a lot of intense work on the planet right now, completely resetting it. And what I see is that these New World Order boys and the Illuminati boys, they only have one option, and that is to shift their assets and energies into the awakening and healing process and forgive themselves and get with the program. That's the only option they have, because the earth and where it's going will no longer be frequency specific to that mindset that they're carrying, and that physical, even their physical embodiment will fail because it's too constricted. Their hearts are too constricted. You know, their brains are too controlling, everything. They can't handle these new frequencies. And so they're going to come down with, you know, Parkinson's and heart attacks and all of these things that their technology is not going to be able to handle. They just are not going to be able to handle the new frequencies. And so I see some awesome things unfolding. I see a tremendous burst in technology, a major movement to empower the individual coming forward. And the main thing is they keep saying is that tyranny is basically over. It's in its death throes right now.
Wow, that is really good news. So almost we're actually watching the death of tyranny now. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of a paradox because, you know, it's like we were just analyzing Senate Bill 1867, and we just went to the core of it and we took it apart. We said, oh, these guys wrote a bill that puts all of them in jail.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. So it's like an implosion on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're responsible for September 11th, so they're all in jail. And
yeah.
They set up Al-Qaeda, so they're all in jail. You know? And everybody knows it. I mean, there are programs on TV that show that 9/11 was an inside job and that shows that Al-Qaeda is controlled by CIA. You know, and it's on TV.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah. So, yeah, they just condemn themselves by passing that bill, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so Orwellian, though. It is. It's the doublespeak going on and the accusing, you know, other people of what you yourself are doing and just the confusion trying to be created around that. And I think what's going to happen is the clouds are going to clear away and everybody's going to see real clearly who's who did what, who's responsible for what, and there's going to be a big accountability program coming.
Right.
You know, that's what I would like to see unfold. And, you know, I'm not against anything. I just want it to stop. You know, I want to get back on the original track, you know, which is to become an Eden and support each other, you know, in our own highest potential, you know, give our children what they need to evolve to their highest potential and start, you know, cleaning up the environment without, you know, I always tell people, there may come a day where you may be trading your Porsche for a loaf of bread if you keep going down the road you're on.
Wow.
You know, so you might want to rethink that.
Wow. One, I've heard a couple of versions of a potential timeline. Mm-hmm. And one version is that between now and 2015 is kind of this breakdown, breakthrough. And then mm-hmm. in 2015 to 2016, we really have the whole changeover where all the old just goes out and gets flushed out and the new comes into power so that by 2016, we have like all, you know, the whole power structure is new.
Yeah.
And then by 2025, we're basically landing paradise on Earth, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of vibe.
Yeah. Have you heard of the Lakota prophecies?
I think I've read them. Tell me more.
Well, I had the honor of actually having dinner with Wallace Black Elk right before I crossed over, and.
Wow.
It was the most interesting experience that he just wanted to have dinner with me and by just alone, you know. And so his entourage there was sitting over in the wings, you know, kind of observing. And we just sat down at the table and you know, I bought him dinner and you know, we were talking about everything. And he saw my presentation at the Star Nations gathering along with quite a few other chiefs that were there. And it's funny. He told me some things. I love what he said. He said, you know, you're like a red apple. He said, some Indians are like a red apple. He said, they're red on the outside but white on the inside. He said, you're like a white apple that's red on the inside. it was kind of funny. And I told him, I said, well, my grandmother and my great grandmother were Cherokee, you know, so we have Cherokee Scotch Irish. And there's a lot of people that all say, yeah, we're Cherokee, but we have the card that comes with it. But right. Anyway, you know, that being said, it was quite interesting. We had a long talk and he said, you know, what you've talked about here and the scientific evidence that you've provided, you know, and talking about, you know, the alignment with the galactic plane and the solar flares and how they affect the consciousness and, you know, the DNA and everything. And he said, everything you've talked about here is in our prophecies.
Wow.
And he was asking me, he says, where did you get this information? And I said, you know, from on high, you know, like, and science, you know, and tying the two together. And it was quite interesting. And so he turned around and he said, there's a beast and the beast is 2,000 miles wide. And he said, that represents how long the beast has to live. And he said, the beast is all consuming. It just wants to control and dominate and consume everything. And he said, in the last days, when you think there's no more hope and you're seeing, you know, the environment being destroyed, the wars, you know, the economy, everything just going in the toilet. He said, the beast consumes itself and folds in on itself. And he said, wow. After this is when you have the 1,000 years of peace and the star nations return. And he said, they have the ability to turn this place back into Eden in a very short time.
Wow.
And so that was, you know, the prophecies. And I've heard a lot of other prophecies that are similar to that, but that's what I see. As soon as this beast falls, we're going to be on, you know, a very rapid healing process for the earth and humanity. And it's going to go very, very quickly.
Right.
And we are going to reunite with the rest of humanity. I mean, the greater family of man throughout, you know, the universe or multiverse, I should say.
Exactly.
And I think everybody's going to have their own experience in this. I mean, some will just see the ships and some might have a physical experience. You know, others are going to see the ships and see the light ships and see and have the fifth dimensional or fourth, fifth and sixth, seventh dimensional experiences. And it just depends on the evolution of the individual. But eventually everybody is going to be aware that we're not alone.
Right.
But, you know, I saw one of your posts and I thought it was interesting around Mercury. One of the solar flares blasted off and revealed this massive mothership sitting right next to Mercury.
Right. Yeah, we began to track those. Nassim Haramein developed the physics to show that the sun is actually an interdimensional portal, as you know, and that it's the interdimensional portal of the solar system. And on planets, volcanoes are the interdimensional portals, are the volcanoes. So that's why Mount Adams is an interdimensional portal. Mm-hmm. And so we, about a couple of years ago, we were approached by a couple of gentlemen who had developed photography that actually showed these enormous ships coming in right at the sun. And if you go up on exopolitics.com, you can see some of the these enormous ships that are by the sun. And this is the first ship that I've seen that is, you know, not only by the sun, but as close to Earth as Mercury. And it's kind of hard to understand, well, is this part of, you know, what is the function of that ship? But from what we've seen of the photographs of the interdimensional ships coming in, the portal of the sun, there's a high amount of traffic. I mean, much more than you might think of ships coming into our solar system.
I know. One thing, too, is that people believe there's no possible way you could be anywhere near the sun because you'd burn up. But you'd only burn up if you were a physical object, because it would be the resistance of a physical object or your body to the heat. But if you were a non-physical object, which they have the ability to do, and which has been very well demonstrated, they could be zipping back and forth, just zipping right through that event horizon around the sun into the black hole in the exterior and jumping into a whole different dimension very easily. And, you know, people see sunspots. If you look at a major sunspot, why is it black if it's not a black hole? And all we're seeing is the event horizon around the sun, you know, is the reaction going on. But at the center of the sun is actually a doorway to a whole nother dimension.
Exactly. So now maybe that ship is there as part of the acculturation process. Because here you had a major news agency, which kind of, for me, that was almost as amazing as the news itself, that Yahoo News was reporting it as a spaceship.
Yeah.
You know, and it says, oh, you know, you have mainstream news is now reporting a large planet-sized spaceship around Mercury close to Earth, and people are just reading it and not blinking an eye and just taking it as natural.
Yeah,
and,
I think,
and so it's
everybody knows it's coming.
Sorry?
I think everybody knows it's coming, like psychically on an inner level. They know a big event's about to happen, and they know the ships are here, and they know something is around the corner. They don't know what it is, but they're feeling something really big is about ready to come down, and I think there's many levels to that.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to start focusing. One tack is that we're going to do two things starting in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
One is, and this will start with an event up in Northern Washington State, and it'll be up on our website soon. But this will be a weekend long event with Andy Bishago on and myself pursuing the making public the entire Life on Mars, Secret Mars agenda, and really making public the fact that the Commander-in-Chief of the United States has been on Mars, even though he's now publishing that there are no extraterrestrials. And we have in mind, if things come together, holding some major conferences entitled "Who is Barack Obama?" That would bring together a lot of, you know, people on that thought and allow this information to surface, because you've got the electoral process going forward of the Republicans and Democrats, and it's like they're going forward on the basis of this extremely limited reality. I just happened to watch in the 2 hours prior to our program here the latest GOP debate, and it's the most artificial debate you can imagine. I mean, they're just talking about very narrow subjects. So we're going to try and begin to surface some of these issues into the mainstream. And the other thing that we're going to do, I was just asked to go to a conference in Australia in in April, mm-hmm. is to begin to talk about the galactic governance, the various councils, and what the various galactic governance councils are doing to help us,
mm-hmm.
so that. You know, so that it's not just us. I mean, we really have we just have a huge amount of galactic help and spiritual help. So those are kind of the two, you know, at least two of the focuses that I'm going to be focusing on, mm-hmm. you know, to try and affect and, you know, push the envelope and try and deconstruct some of the matrix and get this Maya out of the way and wake people up.
I agree. You know, I was thinking that the HARP thing that you're working on, that project too, is chemtrails going to be part of that as well?
Because HARP is just not, i.e., HARP is an integrated three component weapon system, and mm-hmm. the space based component is the weaponized ionosphere, i.e., in environmental warfare, what the function of environmental warfare is to take natural processes and components of nature and make them weapons of war. So they ionize the ionosphere so that it can be made into a directed energy weapon. Now, mm-hmm. that's the space-based component. The atmosphere-based component of HARP are the chemtrails, and those are nanoparticles and toxic metals that are released into the atmosphere that have a couple of functions. One function is to magnify the directed energy weapons effects of the atmosphere-based component of HARP, especially with regard to the mind control. And the other function is that they're binary weapons. They're actually bioweapons, such that they cause a tremendous amount of respiratory illness and mental dysfunction on the population. Mm-hmm. They attack the elderly, the ill, the infirm, and the young. And they're part of the depopulation program, chemtrails. And then the third component are the ground stations. There are now about 17 or so HARP ground stations around the planet. We've been able to isolate the HARP ground station that conducted the March 2011 Fukushima nuclear false flag event, and that was in Tromsø, Norway. And that's funded by the Wallenberg family that is, part of the whole City of London bloodline families. So the U.S. Navy now has some seaborne HARP units. So mm-hmm. it's actually a three-component weapon system. So this would ban all the entire weapons system. And so that would cover the chemtrails. Yeah. Also, since it's an integral part of the HARP weapon system.
Well, what about one thing I've always seen is that, you know, I know there's certain ways we have to operate, but, you know, in banning these weapons and everything else, why not go after the people that have been misusing them and, you know, go to the head of the dragon? You know, we keep just cleaning up the messes they make, and at what point, you know, what point do we go after the person that actually made the mess, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, right. I am completely in favor of that. And that's why in 2007, at the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Conference, I gave a speech identifying them in terms of an international war crimes racketeering organization, almost in terms of RICO laws, because then you can pierce the corporate veil and you can get at them because they're really a racketeering organization, i.e., the City of London banks, the Wall Street banks, the royal families, you know, certain of these heads of government and heads of international organizations, heads of the media, they're all a racketeering organization, and they run a racket called war and exploitation, and go after them on that basis. Now, so you would need the court of competent jurisdiction, and I'm completely for that. I'm not sure if the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal is adequate to do that function. There may have to be a duly constituted tribunal. Ideally, that's what the International Criminal Court is about, but that's controlled by them now. Yeah. So they only allow these kind of piecemeal, you know, well, let's get this African general and kind of make him jump up and down and, you know, blow smoke in everybody's eyes. And so that kind of accountability is, you know, has been very much on our minds, and that was in the speech in that we gave back in 2007. So we would reach in and get all of these major criminals, and we call the royals criminals in gangsters in tiaras, which is what they are. So, you know, so this is what I think over the next few years as this changeover comes. And as you know, right now you have the New World Order kind of team. Their team is in power, you know, and but that team is on the way out. So I think that once the Galactic Powers team begins to come in power, it's going to be a different situation.
Yeah, I do too. Hey, are you open to taking any callers?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think we've got Ray on line 3. I hope he's still hanging in there.
Oh,
but
great.
I'd love to have some people call in and express their views or questions. Are you with us, Ray? We might have lost Ray.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, we'll keep going.
Yeah.
But,
So that's kind of a key question that I've been wrestling with over the last 4 years of how to legally doing that. And I think that the legal way to do that is through a variation of the RICO statutes, the anti-racketeering statutes, because it was General Smedley Butler, who the DuPonts and a bunch of other Illuminatis approached to try and do a coup d'etat against Roosevelt, and he ended up turning them in. Roosevelt didn't prosecute them because he thought that he would, like, cause some kind of catastrophe. But, you know, General Butler said war is a racket, and that's what it is. So you go after them with the anti-racketeering laws, just like you go after against any kind of organized crime, because they are organized crime. And that goes for all the banks, all the bankers. That goes for, you know, all of these, all the royal families are essentially organized crime. That's what they do. They have protected their bloodlines in order to protect their criminal enterprises. I think that represents the downfall of the 280,000-year Anunnaki Illuminati hierarchical exploitative power structure.
Mm-hmm. I know they just got busted on selling just a massive ton of arms to Mexico. to all the drug lords over there.
Yeah.
And then actually importing drugs. So that's going to be a tough one to hide, yeah, because that's hit all the mainstream press.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like you said, the beast, you know, or the Lakota prophecy, the beast is collapsing on itself. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, all you have to do is point to Bill 1867, which I'm looking at it, at the language here,
yeah,
of, you know, and it's, they want to put in jail any person who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the September 11 attacks. Well, yeah, put yourself in jail.
Yeah, they might as well just turn themselves in.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and then they say, any person who was a part of or substantially supported Al-Qaeda. Well, Al-Qaeda is controlled by the CIA, so I guess anybody who wasn't involved in 9/11, that means everybody who was involved in the war on terror, you know, from Afghanistan to Iraq, mm-hmm, you know, join TSA, the crowd and go to jail.
Yeah, TSA, all those guys should all be locked up.
Yeah, yeah. So,
it's all based on a false,
yeah, they're right, right. TSA, everybody. So they just wrote the law that puts them in jail. You, yeah, know, so if you're the president of the United States, you just have to enforce this law and you put them in jail.
Exactly.
You follow me?
Yeah.
No, really, really. Suppose, uh-huh, that in 2016 you have a new president come in who's not,
yeah,
part of the Illuminati farm team, but who's, yeah, actually a citizen. And, mm-hmm, he just looks at this and they say, oh, we can put the following people in jail. Anybody who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks of September 11th, and anybody who supported Al-Qaeda. There you go. That's, yeah, most of the Department of Defense, and that's all the guys who are in on
9/11.
And the whole pack of them go to jail, you know, put them in at hard labor.
Yeah.
No, really. I'm not kidding. You've got, they just wrote the statute. That is their downfall. It's really strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, one other thing I wanted to cover before we,
yeah,
go, you know, it's really interesting. I've been talking about this for a long time, and ufology is so infiltrated with disinformation and misinformation.
Oh,
and it's gotten so dark that people are actually believing the misinformation and acting on it. You know, some good people that don't even know what they're acting on. But I mean, I've seen this basic premise going on, and what I've seen is that certain people in the you know, hierarchy there are very in. They support three things. One, they say chemtrails don't exist,
right?
And then the other one is they're into the depopulation. They said, yeah, we do need to get the population down. And then they also agree that 9/11, the official story, is correct. You know, there,
right,
isn't a conspiracy. And and then there's other groups out there that are so disempowering because they want to say that they're the only, you know, like the Billy Meyer group, where they believe,
right,
that, you know, he's the only true prophet of God and the only contactee on the planet. And I guess he's,
yeah,
going to be on Coast to Coast tomorrow. I'm hoping people call in and call him on this. But, you know, that exclusive program that's going on, I'd love to hear your take on it because, you know, I'm blown away at seeing the people that are they're at the head of some of these fields. They're real chummy, you know, with, you know, the Rockefellers and the other people, and you know, it blows me away. And to hear them talk and say, you know, the official story is correct and chemtrails don't exist, and I just go, oh my God, who are these people? I'm just,
yeah,
hoping people will start holding them to task for this, you know, for
yeah,
for,
yeah, that's certainly, James, I couldn't agree with you more. And there has to be an accountability there. For me, it really came to a head when I decided to really, and you know, this didn't come out of nowhere, because in my book, Exopolitics, I devote a whole part of the book to life intelligence on Mars. So I got myself into uncovering the Mars cover-up from the get-go. And the amount of resistance and projection and undermining that I got from the, quote, leaders of the movement was really extraordinary. It's as though they were in the business of perpetuating the Mars cover-up. And that's what I think they're in the business of, i.e., really sort of keeping the ball rolling by just keeping all of these memes going, which go nowhere, so that year after year after year, things kind of get worse. And worse from a certain point of view, to the point where here you have a president who's actually, where we have independent whistleblower evidence. We have two different witnesses who placed him on Mars, who've been with him on Mars, where he was tasked to learn the Martian language, who's probably met Martians, and has done, you know, deep analysis of them. And his analysis, along with others, has ended up in a 10,000-page presidential threat assessment of Mars. And after Brett Stillings and Laura Eisenhower and Andy Bashago went on Coast to Coast on 11-11-11 and revealed some of this, Andy was called by a gentleman who was in the Reagan White House, who actually had read the 10,000-page Martian threat assessment. So we know from the inside that all of this stuff exists. But here we, as you just said, here we have this hierarchy and this industry and these gatekeepers. They're a gatekeeping organization, and they've gotten themselves into positions of power in all the different organizations and all the different major conferences, so that if you come along and you really begin to reveal real stuff, be it real stuff on kind of either life on Mars or the deep spiritual insights of how things really function, or if you have a, you know, if you're at the Iseti Ranch and you have, you know, very deep dimensional interaction going on, that is all part of the suppression. And they are as much part of the Illuminati containment machine as is Bill, you know, 1867.
Yeah.
The only thing is that they go to UFO conferences.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, it's all about steering consciousness and keeping it in the past and keeping it foreboding or negative. And they're running that program over and over again. Or, you know, and I've seen that just redundantly. Or just to create a lot of in-house fighting or confusion or whatever.
Yeah. Totally, and we have caught these people over and over and over again, and you know, like by mistake, and I'm not going to mention names, but I'm sure you know who some of these are, and they have by mistake sent a copy of their emails to me that they were sending to their colleagues, and they were saying, yeah, let's get this Weber and really do this, that, and the other thing to him, you know. So they actually do plan this this stuff, and they're on the board of directors of these major conferences.
So, oh, yeah.
So there is this gatekeeping going on, and what I figured out is that we just have to do our own thing because we're operating at higher frequencies. So we just keep on doing our thing and putting out our signals, and eventually they're going to overtake their signals.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how long can you keep running the same story over and over again? People are just bored with it. I know that people that go to these conferences, when they go to one of our conferences, they're just excited, you know, and they're just ecstatic and they have huge awakenings. And they go to some of these other conferences and they're going, oh, my God, it was so negative and so dark. I actually got sick and had to leave.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, it is. That's the way it's supposed to be. And and until you realize who's running these things and look at their backgrounds and their connections it's always going to be that way. So as you said, you and I both just kind of went off in our own directions, got our own radio shows and just started doing our own thing. And that was the only way you can get this information out.
Exactly. And as our frequencies increase and amplify, their frequencies are going to collapse.
Yeah.
On each other. Well,
I just have a little issue with is when you have somebody touting, you know, their guy as being the one true prophet of God and the only contactee.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a disempowering message.
It is.
You know, what about making your own personal God, spirit, creator connection? And what about manifesting your own contact and doing your own research? You know, why are you giving your total power away to one guy to tell you how things are? And I just think it's a total disgrace, actually, to all the Indigo children and all the masters and teachers that are here on the planet right now doing their best and, you know, to try to discredit all of them and say that you're the only real guy, you know, it's just unbelievable.
I totally agreed. And I just avoid all of those organizations and situations and just go for wherever the kind of light opens.
Yeah.
And just avoid those dark recesses and organizations and people because they aren't going to change.
No.
And our job is really to get the word out to those receptive souls that are ready to hear it.
Yeah. It's amazing. I watch this over and over. People, you know, they have their insiders, their inside information, and they give all these predictions and prophecies that don't come true, don't happen. And, you know, like disclosure with Obama and all these other things. There's a whole bunch of other things that were promised, you know, and comets hitting the moon and, you know, name it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can go on and on with the whole onslaught of stuff. And I know, you know, I've even handed some of these people some incredible information back in the 90s, which they suppressed.
Wow.
And, you know, you look at this and you go, my God, who? And these people are on the top, you know, and they're the kingpins out there, you know.
Without getting into names, some of the people that you're referring to are actually being tasked by the alphabet agencies, and that's why they're still on top or appear to be on top.
Yeah, they're actually, yeah. You wonder, you go, God, these guys travel everywhere and do everything, and they've always got money, and they got big fancy houses, and you're going, how do they keep going like this, you know?
Yeah.
And they're always number one on the agenda, on the pulpit, you know, so.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. You wonder where the but then you see a meeting with the Rockefellers and some of these other people, and you go, okay, that's where the funding's coming from. But anyway, running up to the end of the hour, I really wanted you to give your website. I guess exopolitics.com is the best way people can get in touch with you. And again, it's been awesome. I love having you on the show. It's been an incredible exchange of information, and I just hope people can really grow from this.
Yeah. Thank you very much, James.
All right. Have a great evening.
Okay. Thank you. You too.
All right. I guess I need a three-hour show now because we still didn't cover half the stuff. But anyway, I guess we're signing off. It's James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. Signing off. Have a great evening.